So the question is, are we ever going to get clarity? And we came very close with the Frank v. Goes decision. Now, this was a case out in California that wasn't really a standing case. This case involved Google's collection of search history and allegations that Google, when it was going and navigating from website to website, was sharing users' search history with third-party websites. So there's this dispute in California federal court. It gets settled. Under the terms of the settlement, the plaintiffs get $8.5 million, but none of that relief is going to go to any class members. It's all going to Cypre entities and to the attorneys. So the issue below is, can that settlement satisfy Rule 23? It's not focusing on standing. It goes up to the Supreme Court on that Rule 23 issue, and in the middle of the briefing in November of 2018, the Supreme Court orders supplemental briefing saying, hey, did the plaintiff even have standing to bring this lawsuit to begin with? And it's interesting because Google immediately files supplemental briefing that says, oh yeah, actually they never had standing, the settlement shouldn't have happened, this whole case should have been kicked at the beginning. And a lot of commentators thought this was the chance for the court to really step in and provide clarity as it relates to Spokio. But on March 20th of 2019, the Supreme Court vacates and remands without any further analysis. So we got so close, but came up a little bit short. So what are the key takeaways from Spokio? Well, first, Spokio is not a silver bullet. A lot of defendants thought this was the end-all be-all for many of these statutory violations, but we see that there is great divergence, and it is not a silver bullet for defeating claims. Its impact is going to be driven by a lot of different factors: the nature of the statute, the nature of the information, how it was used. You also saw in the immediate wake of Spokio this idea that a lot of these claims were going to be filed in state court rather than federal court, because Article 3 is a creature of the U.S. Constitution. States don't have the same Article 3 hurdle. You've seen some of that. You haven't seen a tidal wave of cases being brought in state court, however. And although the Supreme Court declined to resolve the issue or provide greater clarity recently, I do think that ultimately we'll see another trip to the Supreme Court. Okay. I'd now like to shift gears. I know that was fast, but let's turn to Clapper. And to frame where we are, Spokio really focused on when does that statutory violation amount to an injury in fact for Article 3. In most data breach cases, the plaintiffs are alleging maybe statutory claims, but they're also alleging that they face a risk of future harm, that they're an irreparably harmed because they're at a risk for identity theft or other sorts of fraud in the future. So the question becomes whether or not the risk of future harm can satisfy Article 3's injury in fact requirement. That is, when does that risk shift from being very speculative to being sufficiently imminent and concrete such that the plaintiff has Article 3 standing? And Clapper bears directly on that issue. So by way of background, Clapper involved a challenge by Amnesty International and others to an amendment to FISA. And the amendment to FISA had authorized the surveillance of non-U.S. citizens believed to be outside the U.S. And so the plaintiffs alleged that that amendment put them at risk of having their communications with their clients, with their colleagues, intercepted. So it goes up to the Supreme Court on that issue of, is that amendment constitutional? But the Supreme Court never reaches that decision. It finds that the plaintiffs lack standing. So it kicks the case for a lack of standing. Now, below, the plaintiffs had argued that they did have standing because they faced an objectively reasonable risk of harm in the future. But the Supreme Court rejects that standard. It finds that imminence is elastic, but at minimum, the injury needs to be certainly impending. You have to face certainly impending future harm for that to rise to the level of sufficient concreteness, if that's what you want to call it, for it to be an injury in fact for Article 3. And the court also explained that you can't incur out-of-pocket costs to create standing where standing doesn't otherwise exist. So if the risk you're guarding against is not actual, is not certainly impending, the fact that you've bought credit monitoring, the fact that you've spent a bunch of time dealing with the data breach, not sufficient for purposes of standing. So what happens in the immediate wake of Clapper? I'll call it the Clapper tailwind. And you see a lot of courts really focus on whether or not allegations in these data breach cases are sufficient to confer Article III standing. They really look at that harm and they focus on, is that sufficiently imminent for standing? And you see a lot of cases being dismissed in the immediate wake of Clapper. A lot of commentators suggested that maybe this was going to result in a significant decrease in data breach cases. That's not the case. The Zappos case is an interesting microcosm because that case had been kicking around for a few years. The defendants had moved once pre-Clapper to dismiss for lack of standing. It was denied. Clapper comes down. They file a new motion to dismiss for lack of standing. It's granted. More on Zappos in a second. Now, after the tailwind, you started seeing perhaps the pendulum swing back a little bit. I think courts got a little frustrated with dismissing these cases left and right, and the first major case in this area was the Seventh Circuit's decision in Neiman Marcus. And what you saw in Neiman Marcus was that the court accepted the argument that plaintiffs have been making for a very long time, the idea that at least in a criminal data breach where you have a third-party hacker, that if your information is stolen, of course you face a risk of future harm. Of course that's sufficient for Article III standing. Why else would a hacker steal it if they didn't plan to use it for improper purposes? And the Seventh Circuit in the Neiman Marcus decision finds in data breaches involving criminal hacks, there is standing. And they've continued that more recently with their Barnes & Noble decision.